This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Here is U.S. Senator Bob Casey with us this morning on WILK. Welcome, Senator. It's great to talk to you.
Hey, Sue. Thank you. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. And we start out because it is, unfortunately, the leading topic of today is 26 dead in Texas. Senator Casey, when you hear things like this, where do your thoughts go?
Well, it's just horrific, and I just can't even imagine what it's like to be in a place of worship, of all places. And here, I guess the initial gunshots were from the outside, and then the gunman came into the church itself, and then just kept shooting. I can't even begin to imagine the kind of horror that those families and those victims endured. So it's, I think everyone is without the adequate words on a day like today.
Absolutely. And of course, then the questioning begins as to why an individual, as far as we know, and of course there may be things that come out, but this kind of violence on a big scale, total strangers to this individual, children, older people.
Yeah.
It's just, where do you even start to process as a lawmaker, and I guess as a human being with a family too?
No, sometimes the only way to process it and to adequately mourn that loss is to think of it in the context of your own life. In this case, I guess the pastor's daughter was there, and then the pastor was not. He was out of town. I can't imagine what that's like. And I know some people don't want to go to a policy debate, and I understand that, but I'm just unwilling to accept the idea that we can't take some steps in the direction of reducing the likelihood this could happen. I know the president talked last night about mental health, and that's obviously a part of this. We still haven't reached a point where we've got either policy in place or the mechanisms in place to be able to identify people that have those kinds of issues and to prevent them from getting a weapon. But it's good. Like all these tragedies, it'll lead to a bigger debate. But I just find it hard to believe that the greatest country in the world, which we are for sure, can't take steps to reduce the likelihood. But that debate will continue.
Sure. And we know in the Las Vegas situation, Senator Casey, that they are doing analytics on the brain of the shooter.
Is there
anything that leads you to believe that that kind of pathology may merit some sort of result that we're not seeing? I mean, we're just literally taking stabs in the dark all the time on this stuff. You know, this guy was called a loner and other things. But do you think that might merit something in the future, some kind of intensive study of pathology?
Yeah, I sure hope so. In this case, I don't know what the pathologist and the medical expert Well, fine. I guess they have some initial conclusions, but that's certainly going to be. I think we'll at least shed some light on his state of mind. It may not have application for for every circumstance, because each one of these has some differences. So in this case, what I don't know enough about, I just heard a little bit this morning, and I need to learn more, is whether or not, in this case, whether or not this individual, when he was involved in that incident of domestic violence, was he convicted of a felony, or whether he was convicted of a misdemeanor? Because if he was convicted of a felony, he should not have been able to get a gun. But technically, right now, there's no prohibition if you're convicted of a misdemeanor, hate crime, or and it could also be domestic violence. Those individuals are still able to get guns. So I don't know what the particular circumstances was, but that's, I think that's worthy of some review and study to see what happened to him in this particular case.
Is the military system different than the criminal justice system, is I think a question also that some people may have in this regard?
Yeah, it's my understanding from some of the reporting last night that if you're, and this is not something a lot of people have thought about, I guess, is that if you have an honorable discharge, you can get access to a weapon. If you have a dishonorable discharge, you cannot. And it seems from the reporting that his discharge was dishonorable. So that's a whole other set of questions in the context of his military background.
In terms of you and fellow lawmakers trying to get a handle on this, do you believe that this kind of paperwork deserves attention? Do you believe in something broader? And in your own mind and with your colleagues, what do you think should be done here? I mean, we live in a country where there are more guns than people at the moment. We live in a country where if you would try to somehow take people's firearms off of them, I think you would meet with fierce resistance. We also live in a country mm-hmm. where last week we had a truck attack that killed people in New York City. So it's mm-hmm. it seems like a terribly complex situation, and trying to solve it from a legislative perspective obviously falls to you. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the one area where I think there's a lot of consensus is the background check issue. You might remember back in 2013, we had a vote in the Senate. I think, I'm not 100% certain, but I thought we got to about 56 out of 60 or 57 votes. And so that indicates a lot of bipartisan consensus then back in 2013, more than 4 years ago now. I think it was in maybe March of 13. So that's one thing. Obviously, background checks have wide support. And I think that's still possible. I hope we could vote on that again and have a debate about it and then get a vote. But even if you have a background check law in place, some of the questions still arise whether or not the system. In Pennsylvania, it's called the NICS system, the National Criminal Information System. I think I have the right words there. But that so-called NICS system, NICS, the NICS system, and systems like it in other states, or even nationally, sometimes don't work as well as they should. I don't know enough about the technical defects there, but in a country like ours, we have such technical proficiency and very smart people figuring out how to use technology for efficiency and how to identify information and identify, in this case, identify a problem. You'd think we could perfect that to be able to instantly check on someone's background before they're given a military style weapon or even a handgun. So that's, I think, if we at least could get progress made on mental health as well as get a background check law in place and then make sure it works, which, as I just indicated, can also be an issue, we could at least reduce the likelihood. And look, I think it's even progress, Sue, if let's say there's a scenario where in this case someone killed 26 people, Are there ways to reduce the likelihood that he kills anyone, or are there ways to reduce the likelihood that he kills that many at one time? The guy in Las Vegas, I mean, that guy had almost a gun for every victim. He killed 58 people, and he had 47 guns or something like that. Somewhere in those numbers might be off by one or two. But these guys come to these events or come to these incidents with an arsenal and with body armor and an escape plan, and so they come in a very premeditated way, armed to the teeth, like a small army in and of themselves.
But as far as we know, Senator Casey, the Vegas shooter, he passed all the checks, right? Those weapons were technically his. So are you suggesting a limit on the amount of weapons that someone may own?
Well, I think we just have to ask a question. If someone is buying a lot of high-powered weapons at one time and a lot of ammunition, is that something that we should be concerned about? I think it is. I just refuse to believe that the greatest country in the world can do absolutely nothing about this problem. And I think the response has to be more than just the mental health part of this. But that's a frustration. We can't seem to get beyond this stalemate in the debate. And frankly, we don't debate it enough, because sometimes in the Congress or even in the country, an incident occurs, people debate it, they talk about it, they argue back and forth, and then it gets pushed to the side, and months go by before anyone debates it again. And we somehow have to figure out a way to sustain the debate and then see if there isn't something we can do. Is the subject of consensus.
Do you see bipartisan support for anything regarding these situations?
Yes, background checks. I think that was demonstrated back in 2013. I hope there's more than that, but and I've supported, as you know, the limitation on the magazine. Why does someone need 30 bullets or more than 30 bullets at any one time, because the availability of that kind of capacity of ammunition guarantees that when someone starts shooting, it's not going to be three or four people killed. It's going to be a much higher number. As you know, this incident was 26 people in a church. Newtown was, I guess, 27 when I saw that number on a graphic today. 20 children and then, I guess, 7 adults ultimately. In Newtown, Connecticut. When you have that, the power of the weapon combined with that much capacity in the magazine, you're almost definitively going to have victim numbers that high before anyone can respond. Especially with a semi-automatic weapon, which is as close as you can get to an automatic weapon, which technically has been illegal since the 30s when they outlawed machine guns. But with these semi-automatic weapons, with these bump stocks, are in essence an automatic weapon. So,
Is there anything being done on the bump stocks, to your knowledge? I mean, is there anything being put together on that?
I think there's bipartisan support for legislation which has been introduced, but so far, the majority leader McConnell hasn't indicated whether he'd allow that bill to come to the floor. The administration has been saying that they think they might be able to deal with this within existing law or within federal government agencies. But I think if a bill like that came to the floor that was limited to this bump stock enhancement, if you want to call it that, I think it would pass pretty easily.
Okay. And just an overview of your feelings regarding the tax plan that was put forth last week, and how you think it may change with the Senate. And do you think that there's any merit to the tax plan at all?
Well, look, I express real concern with the framework, which wasn't a bill, but it was an outline of the proposal, and it was a unified Republican framework, which meant the administration and both houses of Congress signed on to it, in essence, or at least the leadership did. Now it's a bill, and there's more review that we should undertake, and certainly the review is, the best reviews are done by these tax policy think tanks that have been looking at these issues for years, and they'll be coming out with more and more analysis. But my sense, the initial sense I have is there's permanency for corporate tax cuts to the tune of a trillion and a half over 10 years. That's 1.5 trillion with a T. That there's permanence with regard to that. And there's permanence with regard to the very wealthiest. The middle class seems to get, some in the middle class seem to get a tax break in year one, and maybe a few years after that. And then there's some analysis that shows that their tax break goes away, or actually their tax liability or tax responsibility increases, where they're actually, where taxes are going up in over the course of the decade. What I think we should start with is, first of all, have a process which examines the tax code for months, and that means lots of hearings. We haven't had very many in the Finance Committee. What the House Republicans want to do is, they introduced a bill Thursday, so they have bill text on Thursday. They're having a markup of that today, and markup is a fancy Washington word for when you consider the bill and various members of the House Ways and Means Committee can offer amendments, and the end of the markup means the committee passes the bill or doesn't, but I'm sure they have the votes for it. That means that they've considered a tax bill over the course of a few days instead of what I think it requires, which is several months. So I think if we could do this in a considered and thorough way, in a bipartisan fashion, we could get consensus that's bipartisan on simplicity, on making sure the middle class gets a huge and maybe even unprecedented tax cut. And I don't think the top 1% should get a dime if we could avoid it. And the top 1% doesn't need the money. And it's not creating jobs when they get the money. If we create permanency for corporations, why can't we create a permanent tax cut for the middle class, at least for 10 years? But the bill text so far doesn't point in that direction.
Right. U.S. Senator Bob Casey, thanks for joining us today. I hope we could talk more often in the future. It's always good to hear what's on your mind and what's going on in Washington. We really appreciate it.
So thank you, and thanks for the time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.